Hot round! Red 7, red 7, red 7! Don!
What?
Red 7!
I don't know what red 7 means.
I call it the annexation of Puerto Rico.
You don't think that lame-ass play where I run downfield and act like I'm lost is gonna work, do you?
Booyah! That's what we call a sack lunch!
Get me the ball.
You need the ball.
Get me the ball.
Get me the ball.
That's gonna make the difference between winning and losing. Between living and dying.
Welcome into 11 Personnel, back and better than ever. I'm Nick Roush with Adam Luckett, who was just holding up a UK football ticket. Where was that football ticket?
I was cleaning out my laptop bag this morning.
Oh,
Jerry Lorenzen game, actually.
Oh, nice.
You know what I use these for?
Like bookmarks in your Phil Steele?
Bookmarks. These make the best bookmarks, these tickets.
So you're saying you read books too?
I do. I'm reading Bruce Feldman's The QB right now.
Oh. It's not like, you know, Malcolm Gladwell or, you know, I could have seen you being a like a history World War II kind of guy of sorts, but of course, just, you know,
no,
more.
I haven't. My father-in-law just gave my wife the Energy Bus, the Willie Cauley Stein book. I don't know if you remember that. I think I'm going to read that. My wife's going to read it first. But I'm reading this, and then I've got a couple other books I want to read this summer. Like, I want to read Moneyball. Never read that.
Did you read the Coach O book with Bruce Feldman yet?
Not yet. I'm going to buy that later, but it's kind of tainted now with everything that's going on at LSU. He's going to have to, like, write a second edition. But I've read The Meat Market, his first book with Orgeron. Yeah. That's a great – I think everybody should read that. That book is great.
Man, I wish I had time to read books. Instead, I just end up reading like long profiles, and that's pretty much like the extensive of my book reading. Because especially, man, you get the Athletic 10,000 word articles. Yeah. It's like, you know, it's a chore.
I read one today on Adrian Martinez, actually.
Who? Is that a baseball player?
Somebody wrote a big piece on Adrian Martinez today. I read that this morning.
Is he baseball?
Who's Adrian? The Nebraska quarterback.
Oh, I get all my – really? Like it? You're spending your time on Nebraska quarterbacks named Martinez?
Yeah,
just wasting your time, pal.
Just need to know what's going on out there.
Well, you know what is going on? This week, Racing Louisville is opening up the NWSL franchise here in Louisville. Like, basketball season's over. It's full speed ahead with football. And this is Kentucky's first ever major league team. They're in the premier division of women's soccer. And the first game in the NWSL Challenge Cup, it's against the Orlando Pride, the home of one Alex Morgan. She's pretty good at soccer, which I guess football. We'll stick to football on a football podcast.
That Orlando Stadium is right by the Citrus Bowl. I remember passing it up.
Yeah. I remember that as well. It's a nice stadium. It's not as near as nice as Lynn Family Stadium.
Oh, no way.
Have you been out there yet, Luckett?
Just drove by it on the expressway. I know KRC had got a little behind-the-scenes tour.
Yeah, and I actually went to a Louisville City game there last year. You need to take your chance now to go to a game by visiting RacingLouFC.com to get tickets and using the promo code KSR for tickets at a discounted rate. They aren't steep. You can also check them out at SeatGeek to find more. But I'm telling y'all, Lynn Family Stadium, it's immaculate. And I'm very excited for when they can even have more and more folks show up, because it's really the perfect viewing experience. There's not a bad seat in the house. They've got tons of bars, food. I mean, and they even have an area where like the kids can play while you watch the game. It's exciting. I know you're a baseball guy, but a soccer game, you got to be locked in. There's no like downtime where you're farting around between pitches. Soccer keeps you locked in the whole entire time.
It's very similar to basketball in the up and down nature.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of basketball, who is the college football version of Mark Few? I've been racking my brain on this now. So you've got this guy who's built a dynasty out of nowhere, plays a soft schedule, gets to the championship and just can't get over the hump.
Ah, man. I want to say – because the problem with college football is a lot of times teams just don't make it there. I would liken it to the old Big East teams that,
yeah,
you know, your Louisville's, your Rich Rods at West Virginia's that were always knocking on the door but could never completely get it done. They would always slip up at some point. But it really is difficult.
I mean,
to,
like, Lincoln Riley is the one I came up with, maybe inverse Bob Stoops, because Bob Stoops won it early, but then got there a bunch of times afterwards and could never win it.
Yeah.
And they kind of dominate that league. But yeah, like what he's built at Gonzaga, well, I mean, you can't do that in football for the obvious reasons.
Would it be, what's his name, that was at Boise and went to Washington and just retired?
I mean, that's probably the closest thing you could say, because they, in 2010, they legitimately could have won the national championship if it wasn't for Colin Kaepernick in Nevada on Thanksgiving Friday.
What's his name now? Boy,
I can't Chris Peterson.
Chris Peterson. There we go. It's got to be a West. It's got to be a West Coast guy too. Just, oh, they don't play real sports. West of the Rockies. Which I love that narrative, by the way.
Right.
Very much love hating on the West Coast Conference. If you couldn't tell by my tweets.
And just the metrics wise, he had four top two teams in the last 5 years. Now, obviously, one tournament was canceled, but to go on that run and not win a national championship,
can't win the big one.
There are some people that would get bashed for that in the press, but I don't think few will be one of those. It's just something to keep in mind. That's what my big brain takeaway from last night was, and what was a dominant performance.
Was the big brain takeaway?
Well, I got a big head, so I gotta.
Oh, that is, in fact, a large dome. Ooh, I like this. Sporting News just ranked the best teams to not win a title. We've got your 0-3 Cats are in the mix at 32.
They were number one in KenPom that year.
Yeah, they were very good that year. As we mentioned previously, first team to run the table completely, right, in the SEC?
Regular, I think, season. They were the first power conference team to run it in a 16-game schedule, then plus the conference tournament. So really, probably the conference tournament era, they were the first to do that.
I'm not going to check your math on that, but I will agree with you. That sounds good to me. They've got 2010 Kentucky in there at 21. And, of course, they're going to have this 2015. Ooh, they've got Fab Five at number 9. Chris Webber's timeout. Man, I laugh every time I see that clip. I just do. I can't help it. We've got 2015 Kentucky at number 2, right behind the UNLV team that lost to Duke, which is, yeah.
That's fair.
Yeah. Totally respectable. The Patrick Ewing Georgetown team that lost to Villanova is 3.
Yeah.
So
sounds about right.
That's a good list. With this year's Gonzaga team at number 5. Suck it, Gonzaga. Thanks for giving me so much money that I will have to bet at the Kentucky Derby, which, look, you know me, when I got the news that they're letting people in the infield, like, it just, I was popping champagne. I was Mercury Morris after the last undefeated team lost.
I want you to do your research, and then on our official draft preview pod at the end, we can just let you handicap out and give us some winners.
Okay. All right.
Oaks and Derby.
All right, there's one horse. I'm biased because I know the person whose assistant trainer used to play basketball with him back in the day. Obizos is a late running long shot that if some horses get out of the field, he could come in and hit a ticket. But I will say it's going to be more wide open than normal.
Well, last year there was just that one lock that can't miss.
Yeah, and it ended up missing. But the horse that ended up winning, I mean, he won the Breeders' Cup Classic too. It was a Baffert horse. So even though it wasn't the favorite, it was still like your second or third best horse in the field. This year, the best horse is Essential Quality. It just won a heck of a race at the Bluegrass at Keeneland this weekend. He's a gray Brad Cox. Brad Cox is from Louisville. He's my dog. His kids go to sales. Like, basically, if I could make somebody my best friend, it would be him. He has won me so much money. It is ridiculous. Love Brad Cox. It's going to be like a 1-2 favorite. You're going to win no money at all on him on Derby Day. But he could get beat. That horse could get beat. It was a tight race. He won the Breeders' Cup Juvenile as well. Undefeated right now. So I'm going to be very hyped on Derby Day, rooting for Essential Quality. Hope it happens, but who knows? And that was Derby handicapping.
Very nice to have the Derby and Masters on their correct dates this spring.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm very excited about that.
And it really is a, like, this week it's like 80 degrees in Louisville. We're even recording earlier than normal because my office is getting so toasty and I got to have the window unit on. It'd sound like crap while recording. But the getting out of basketball and into Masters Derby, there's just something in the air, like it, especially in the city of Louisville.
The Final Four to Master transition, I think, is the best transition in sports.
It's so smooth. It really is.
You go from one Super Bowl in a major sport to another Super Bowl in a major sport, just like that, and the same guy's announcing it.
Yeah.
It's just smooth. I think it's the best transition that we have in the sporting world.
The only thing that I wish that they did differently was go back to the old days whenever the women's championship was on Tuesday night and they played the Final Four on Sunday, just because it was much easier to kind of wean yourself off, you know?
Right.
So I do, and hell, that was a much better game than the one last night, particularly if you weren't cheering for Baylor. So shout out to the women. Shout out to Jim Nance. It is Jim Nance season. It's also Webby season. She's coming up here to say hi to me. Sweet little pit bull. She's wanting to walk. I can feel it in her prancing around the room. But it's Jim Nance season. And love him or hate him, he has the mantle right now as the sports guy. I mean, he does them all. But like, I wanted to know your ideal announcing team for a Kentucky football broadcast and a Kentucky basketball broadcast. Because the thing about Nance, I'm really glad he doesn't do college football. I don't like him that much in NFL. Like, he just doesn't feel like much of a football guy to me. Romo's lighting him up. It's loosened him up some. I can even hear it some in the basketball broadcast where he'll kind of crack some jokes here and there. But he's still, I don't like him for football. Hello, friends. Like, it's just not football. So I'm curious, like, it. Who is your ideal Kentucky football broadcasting crew?
Now on this, can we?
All time.
All time.
Yeah, it doesn't have to be right now. All time.
The first thing I'll say is the ESPN 7 o'clock, so not the Herb Street, but the other primetime slot with McDonough.
And Blackledge.
Blackledge. Kentucky got it for A&M a couple years ago. That's a good team.
Florida this year?
They had, not this year, but the year before that, they had Levy, Greasy, and McShay.
I don't like them too much. I think
they do a good job.
They're fine, but Levy and Greasy are both they have dry voices. They don't have much.
There's not a lot of personality behind the way they talk.
McDonough's great, and then Blackledge, I think, is a good mix with them. So that's probably, just watching a game, that's my favorite team. I feel like, but all time, that's you'd have to really dig in. I'm trying to think back when I was little. Do you just want to go the Jefferson Pilot route?
Man, I think I would go the Jefferson Pilot route for basketball.
Yeah,
the old Larry Conley and Jodine Jr. Tom Heyman, Larry Conley. That would probably be my all time basketball one with. I really did like when Sean Farnham was doing it before they had him doing all that hokey in pregame stuff where he's like walking down the steps and doing all that junk. I really liked Farnham and Brad Nessler and also Tess. People forget that we had Tessitore for a while with doing SEC tournaments. He was incredible. But I do think I would probably go Nessler, Farnham behind Hammond, Conley. In my basketball rankings.
Yeah. Like, there was a Ron Frank. You probably won't remember this, Nick. Ron Franklin, Mike Gottfried was a team I remember as a little kid. And I just thought Franklin had like this, I guess, like a Southern draw kind of strong voice. Mm-hmm. I just thought they were so cool. I was like, man, I would love to do that job. And then, Uncle Vern, it'd be hard for me to pass Uncle Vern. I'd almost have to have him. The SEC CBS jingle. Gary Danielson's not great.
If we had Uncle Vern with
That's what I'm trying to think. Who would I put him with? Who
like even really on like even on basketball, guy? If you had him with Raftery, that would be great. Like I
did
I love
some
Onion.
Stuff for CBS in the tournament. I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, well, he did Duke Kentucky. He did the shot in '92. Right. He did the shot and he did the kick six. And I think part of where I wanted to work to with this is that I really like I like Nestler now. Uncle Vern is obviously the GOAT when it comes to CBS stuff, but Musburger was my, like, I was so happy, even though he was older, I was so happy that he did a lot of those the Saturday night special. I just don't know who, I guess Herb Street is just going to forever have that mantle as the best right-hand man because Dan Fouts was garbage. It's just a shock to me that they even paid him. Herb Street's good, but I wish there was more of a character. You know what I mean? Like, that's what's great about basketball is even like Dickie V in his prime, Raftery now. Like, you have some sort of character, some personality there. And we don't really, I guess, whenever you get a, maybe they could become it with like Golic Jr. And maybe if McAfee does a little bit more, it could go that direction. But I need more personality because college football is supposed to be a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. I don't need all this stuffiness because we got plenty of that in the NFL.
I have to go back 2 years ago now, and they can't do it now because Adam Amin moved over to Fox. But Amin, McAfee, and their third, who was their
Hasselbeck.
Third guy?
Hasselbeck.
I thought that was a really good team. I thought they did a great job because I think Amin's a really good play-by-play guy. McAfee has his own little style, and then Hasselbeck, like I think just him himself, he could get a little dry, but in between those two guys,
yeah, he's good.
I think it was a really good balance.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. And Amin, too, he's a great, that's another great big voice. I was watching the old shots of Agumba Wale from Notre Dame when she hit those shots.
Right. Yeah.
And he's just losing his mind. Agumba Wale! I mean, it's so awesome. So I'm with you there, Luckett. Which, man, Fox, they're stealing the big voice guys.
I know. Brock Heward's another guy I liked as a color guy. He did the Citrus Bowl a couple years ago. He's moved to Fox now. He's on their college football. Right. He's just the Pac-12 games and stuff.
It's also the SEC and me that I don't like Joel Klatt just because of how highly he talks about.
I'm not big on Joel Klatt. He's grown on me a little bit. Now that he's got away from this SEC, the anti-SEC shtick.
I mean, it's like
Cannell both, but still.
It's like Cannell. Yeah, Cannell. Just – you, when you have a take opposite of Cannell, it's, you're on the right side of history, you know? But enough broadcast. Man, it just got me fired up for like some big games on Saturdays. I'm really hopeful that everybody's getting shot up right now so we can have some big games. I don't know if you've done it yet, Luckett, but you can schedule an appointment at Walgreens and get in like the next day.
I'll be scheduling the next week or so.
Goal
is to get it done by Derby, I think.
Yeah. So yeah, go ahead and get one to, I think in Lexington, they're giving out the Johnson & Johnson shots now at their, at LUFCA, the Lexington Fayette County Urban Government. Those are just one shots and you're done. So you can sign up there. I was shocked at how quickly the pharmacy ones, like you don't have to just go to one of these big sites. You can just go to your pharmacy that's a mile down the road. So let's make it happen so we can get full stadiums back. I know I'm going to be in Nirvana walking around in the Derby infield. It'll feel like home. We need college football to feel like home because, you know, it's just not the same. It's not the same. Like we did get a different version of Liam Cohen Tuesday morning. He's been, I don't want to call him a sunshine pumper up to this point, but, you know, he said a lot of nice things. He's came in excited. He speaking at length about just what the offense has been doing, yada, yada, yada. And we finally got it just pissed off Cohen. And frankly, I'd love to see it. He was just ticked off today.
He was, man. I don't think he ever got asked that directly, but it wasn't hard to see.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He's bad poker face because he was kind of trying to not be as outward, but he just kept stressing getting in your book. And when we talked about the adjustments from pro to college, that's one of the biggest hurdles is you don't have unlimited time. And I think that's driving him nuts that some of the guys aren't doing the extra effort so that when it comes to meeting time, they're not playing catch up. It's not any remediation of any sorts. I think that just really ticked him off today because some guys weren't as prepared as they needed to be.
You go back to the beginning of spring, they were pretty upfront with, we're hitting them with everything kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And now you just hit the point where you hit the wall. What's it like, the third or fourth week?
Yeah. They're,
they can see the light at the end of the tunnel.
Probably practice 8 or 9. You don't have a game to get hyped up for.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I can't blame them. We're all human.
I don't even think they've had a scrimmage yet either.
Yeah. The way he talked about it. Right. Which
I'm guessing they're going to have one on Saturday and then one next Saturday.
Yeah. Or maybe. He said two. So,
yeah, maybe. Yeah. When's the last practice? The 24th? Whenever it is, it might be the last two Saturdays. So it might not be this Saturday. It might be the next two. But yeah, I think it's definitely some walls being hit.
Yeah.
And you know, they could be struggling with the mass of the playbook, I suppose. We've heard him throw that out a lot. But I wonder if that was more just – that sounded more just like for the younger players, I think.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Because it's part of our jobs, too, where – I mean, how many times can we ask about Wandale Robinson? You know, so we get farther down the depth chart and start asking about guys, and it's like, you know, need to get in their playbooks. You know, mm-hmm. Isaiah Cummings and Mike Drennan were two that were asked about today. US, one of them, and they're both guys who need to get in their book, as Cohen would say.
It was an interesting dynamic. Two 2020 guys, second year in the program, need to get in the playbook. Two 2021 early enrollees, Lavelle Wright, Chauncey Magwood, doing a great job getting in their playbook.
Yeah.
And knowing what they want to do and kind of saying, these guys love football.
Right. And you know what, though?
Like, not just saying the other two don't, but just saying these guys are like dudes we can trust kind of thing.
And, like, here's the thing. Between us, between our listeners, like – I mean, Drennan's a skateboarder, mm-hmm. you know, like there's a difference between a guy who's a great athlete and a guy who just eats, drinks, and sleeps football. I'm not saying you have to be one of those to be a successful football player, but when it comes to impressing the new coach in the first 2 weeks of practice, like, those guys are just going to jump out more. They just are trying to learn a new offense. I'm sure for Drennan and Cummings, like, I bet a lot of, like, right now, I would just be pumped that it's nice outside and things are getting kind of more normal and you can socialize a little bit more. Like, I was that guy, you know? So I completely understand, but that's part of the you said it pretty plainly. Like, there's the eat, sleeps, drinks, football, and then there's the, well, they aren't spending enough extra time on their playbook. So, but I do think, man, what he had to say about Magwood was, he said you could see a lot of former quarterback in him, which
that was a wrap on that kid coming out of South Georgia. It was, this kid loves to play football, and, like, he's gonna be able to be a guy that can contribute right away because of this IQ, high level IQ he has, receiver ability, and then what he can do with the ball in his hands that he showed at quarterback. And I thought Lavelle Wright, I thought what he said about him was nice too. And there's a shot for playing time there at that running back spot. And you look at Lavelle, he's bigger than I thought he was.
Yeah.
He's tall. He's about 6'1". I think he's right at 210.
Well, and
he's going to be a guy that gets up to probably 225 by the time he has a few years in the strength and conditioning program. There's a void there. Tisdale. Yeah, and McLean haven't grabbed it yet.
Mm-hmm.
So he's going to have a chance. And the scrimmage is going to – that's where you really make your move. You can only do so much in practice where you're tagging off. But in a scrimmage where you're going to go live, that's what's really going to separate and kind of maybe allow players to grab a spot on a depth chart heading into the summer.
And I think it also – obviously, Wright wasn't doing the same kind of route running that he will be asked to do now, but we've seen him make plays out of the passing game. I mean, my God, that play he made to win the game at Douglas in the season opener last year was nuts. Mm-hmm. Like that was a heck of an effort play where, you know, it's just a check down, but he's got open field and he knows how to operate. He doesn't have to just bang in between tackles. He's a football player, and I think that's another asset about both those guys, where they'll do a little bit of whatever for you. And man, the other thing too, that just thinking back to what Charles said, Walker, who was on the KSR football podcast, he was talking about the kind of routes that Wandale was running. He's just like, you know, Juice would do some of that kind of stuff, but not really anybody else has been doing it since. And Wandale's doing it now, even though Magwood is not polished by any means necessary. He has the football IQ to get there. He's at least shown those signs early on.
Yeah, what I would assume Charles is meaning is some of those option routes.
Right.
The receiver makes a read and either goes left or right on whether it's out or they kind of call it a whip route. That's something, if you go back and watch the Kentucky-Florida game, that they called it a jerk route, Doering did. It was pretty much just like he makes a read and then, you go left or right pretty much. And you put a lot of faith in a receiver to do that. And that's something I think they trusted Juice to do. And he usually got open on those, especially in like they would go to that on like third and short or fourth and three a lot, where Juice would make a quick cut, some either inside or outside, and Johnson would hit him to get a first down. But yeah, I think that's what Wandale definitely brings to the table, is that short area burst and quickness to get open and get some easy completions for your quarterback.
A warning to our listeners. I'm really worried that my caffeine high is about to just burn out because it was a late night last night, but I was jittery before this podcast. So excited to talk a little football and, like I said, football at Lynn Family Stadium, RacingLouisvilleFC.com. Go check out one of those games. I'm just excited to get outside. It's going to be 80s. I got sunburn on my dome over Easter weekend. Like it, first dome burn of the year. That happens when you don't have hair on the top of your head, in case you were wondering.
Neck burn for me, Easter Sunday, out of the family farm.
We're back. We are all the way back. Did you milk any cows?
Did not. Had to keep one of my dogs from jumping in the pond and biting fish off of people's poles who were fishing out there. But other than that, good. Eating moss, just regular dog activities.
Did you pull any eggs out from the chickens and then hard-boil them for the hunt?
No, we had an adult Easter egg hunt. Got me some oatmeal cream pies.
Oh.
So
was there beer?
For breakfast this week. Pretty excited about that.
I've heard that there's beer adult Easter egg hunts. Were there beers there?
We didn't do beer, but I have participated in those before, for sure.
Oh, man. That was pretty cool. One other football thing I wanted to mention. Because we recorded in the middle of Pro Day stuff last year. The NFL draft, it's coming. It's Derby weekend. We got
3 weeks from Thursday, as I look at my calendar right now.
Nice. So we got a little twofer going, and Jamin Davis, we were marveling at just watching him from afar and not knowing the numbers. They were as stupid as we expected. Of course, the 40 times were Pro Day 40 times, and this year the Pro Day 40 times have just been incredible. Loving every second of the embellishment from the stopwatches. And hey, those are the rules. They're just playing by them. So
yeah,
but
Kentucky did get roasted a little bit by some draft folks for the 40 times, believe it or not.
Oh man, I mean that's not surprising whatsoever. But Davis is still, he lived up to the billing on film. He's going to end up being a day one pick. I know Daniel Jeremiah had Kelvin Joseph in his latest first round. He'll be most likely day two, but if a team likes him, they might go to day one. I haven't dug into it all the way, Luckett, but I don't get the sense that cornerback, I can emphasize that, is very deep in this year's draft. So, you can have a run on him early and he could pop off the board quickly. But my biggest takeaway from the overall event is just, I think Brandon Echols really proved that he can be a slot corner and a specialist, at the next level.
Yeah. There's a guy on Twitter who's putting in like graphics where it shows like how these guys rank, and Echols size wise, obviously was lower tier, but on all the shuttles and runs and stuff, he was very good, elite level. And then I think Landon Young too. I think he put up some big numbers.
Yeah.
Like Echols is a guy now I could see going in the fifth round, which I think That was about as good as you could ask for.
Yeah, yeah. And he didn't have a, I mean, he did have a great CPR at the end of the year, and he had a pick in his final game, but he didn't put up gaudy numbers, especially for a team that picked off a bunch of passes.
We have to remember the competition level this year, too.
No,
and Kentucky didn't have a pass rush.
Yeah.
Like, they had to, I mean, Alabama, Florida, Ole Miss. Those are three passing offenses that you may see one of that caliber every 3 years. They saw three in the same, in a shortened season.
Yeah, yeah.
And they still, the defense still had overall good numbers when you look at back at the end. So I think that's important to remember when you're grading Echols. But I think he's a proven tackler, or willing tackler, I should say.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, particularly
top-notch short area quickness.
That first year, man, he made a ton of tackles. And I think he was Kentucky's leading tackler for a while.
Yeah, the only concern I would have with him is teams are probably going to draft him to be that slot corner. And I think Kentucky tried him out there, and it just didn't really work. So can he make that transition? But from a special team standpoint, he brings value, and as a reserve corner, he brings value. But he's got to be able to play inside, because I don't think he can be an outside corner, really. He would get picked on for the lack of size out there. But he's going to be a guy that's going to get drafted, I think, and going to be given a very good chance to make the team. And then over to Landon, the profile, I don't see how he does not get drafted. Former five-star recruit, started multiple years, played left tackle the entire time. Great teammate, captain, married, mature, bounced back from an injury. Country strong. I just like, that's a guy that you just draft him. Like, I mean, look at it. He checks all these boxes. Like, right, that's a guy right. We want in our locker room. Let's get him in here, give him a shot, and even plan on keeping him around because he's a good presence to have, I think, in the locker room. So that's, I mean, he has to go. And then I think Drake for a lot of the same reasons. So I think you're looking at the fifth, sixth round. I would expect all three of those guys to go off the board. And then late, we'll see if someone will take a flyer on maybe someone else. But I think you walk into this draft feeling like, and then plus Duffy.
Yeah, and then
feeling like six guys are going to go off.
But Bohanna, too.
And Bohanna, too, seven. My Bohanna will go off, too.
Yeah.
Probably in that fifth, sixth round range, I would assume.
There's just not knows. Like him and McNeil for NC State, like there's just not a lot out there. So if you need one,
yeah,
those are the guys you got to get.
I feel pretty confident about them getting seven draft picks, which I think will be a program record.
It's pretty good. Yeah. It's weird because I've tried to do that number crunching before. They used to have like 17 rounds.
Yeah, you have to keep it in the modern era. When they used to have 28 rounds.
Yeah, like in the 80s, you know, you'd have a ton of guys getting picked. And I wonder if those guys even would like show up to camps, you know. I mean, they drafted so many players. There's one person who he could have been in this year's class. He'll be in the next one. That's Darian Kennard, which every time we see him look at, he gets scarier.
Yeah, it's, he's a big old boy.
It's like he's extreme. I don't know how to put it. I really don't. But it's almost like if you got to customize your character on like a video game and you get to earn upgrades. If it was Grand Theft Auto and you got to make your person more of a badass, Kennard does that every time we see him. Today, he had on a chain that could knock your ass out if you hit him with it. And I think he upgraded his tats, too. Like, I think he's got a full sleeve now. And dude just looks – he's scary as hell, man.
Strong pop superstar bodyguard vibes.
Yeah, I mean
– Darian Kennard.
Oh, or like – yeah, I would agree because he would be near the stage. And if anybody got close, like, you're stopping when you see him. Because dude is just
– Nick Lewis. I don't know if he'll make it.
Mm-hmm.
But he can make a good living just being a bodyguard.
No, without a doubt. But Kennard, man, he's the kind of guy that, like, whenever Kentucky used to play, like, early 2000s, you'd show up to games. It's like, why can't we have guys that look like that? He fits the bill. And also, he's really good at blocking. Like, he's a good player, too. It's not just bark. He's got a lot of bite behind him as well.
Yeah, and he had a good or interesting comment about just the steps with the outside zone. That's really, really the key point. It's making sure in that zone, making sure you're not leaving too early, making sure you're timing it right with the guy next to you so he's there to get that guy so you can move on to get the outside guy. Something they're working through. And, of course, we can't see how it's going, but it's what it is. But I think that was kind of what we expect. And I thought it was important to realize this guy's played left. Like, he played a lot of left as a true freshman.
Yeah. That was the Lane was forget hurt, right?
That. So this should make it a better transition.
Yeah, no, you're exactly right. A smoother
transition.
He also, because, you know, Cohen did say some nice things about Jagger Burton's just talent. And Kennard was very quick to be the old man saying, you're going to learn today, son. You got a lot to figure out still. So I really enjoyed that.
You got to pay your dues a little bit.
I love it. And like, I mean, I think it's, if you've got that guy teaching Burton how it needs to be, it's going to be that,
right?
You know? So great to hear. Even though it wasn't a glowing review from practice from Liam Cohen, that's what I like. I like a good mix up. They can't all be great. They're not always going to be great. But we still learned something this week from spring practice, Adam Luckett.
Yeah, learned they didn't have a great day today, it seems like, and they've hit the wall, which I think is kind of expected. I bet next week we'll probably hear how good they've bounced back.
No, we certainly will. And we're also going to see the Racing Louisville open up their season this Saturday at Lynn Family Stadium. Get your tickets. Now, we've got a link at KSR. KSR readers, get discounted Challenge Cup tickets. You can get in the door for less than $20. It's going to be a sellout. Be there when they kick off the season this Saturday, April 10th at 7 p.m. at Lynn Family Stadium. And once again, join us back here next week. We're going to talk some more football.
Talk Masters. Give them a Masters picks right quick.
Oh, yeah. We can't forget Masters picks. So the thing I do, like I do basically like the, it's not daily fantasy, but my group of friends, you know, you have your upper tier, your lower tiers. There's so many lower tiers. I can't just bet on the Postman and Fleener this year. So who are some of those lower tier guys that I can fish for some.
Okay. Important thing to remember with Masters, it's a second shot golf course.
Oh, that's perfect for me.
So yeah.
The second shot golfer.
So like, obviously if you're like Bubba and you can bomb it off the tee, if you're accurate with it, that's obviously going to help because then you can just wedge into everything. But strokes gained approach, like the approach shots is what you want to look at. Now, like obviously the guys at the top of the board, you've got like Morikawa, Justin Thomas, DJ's up there right outside of the top 10. But you're looking for like, so if you wanted like a 50-to-1 shot or something like that, is that kind of area you're looking at?
Yeah. Give me, or even longer, because I just go on total score. So they don't even, you know, it's not even necessarily to win.
Like Cam Smith finished, I think, top five here last year. He's 35-to-1. He's played really well this year. He's got the mullet.
Oh, say no more.
So he's definitely interested. Hatton's 50-to-1. He's top 10 in strokes gained approached. But the good thing about this, you've got a lot of guys like Wilson Zalatoris is somebody I've been big on, like top 10s, top 20s this year. He's top five in that metric. He's 75-to-1. Now he's a rookie. This is his first time ever playing Augusta, but he's been good all year. Abram Hanser's 80-to-1. I like him. So there's a lot of good guys out there. I would say if you're looking for somebody like that, I would probably stick with Hatton. 50-to-1, I think, is good value on him.
Okay. Relation to Vernon Hatton?
Do not think so. Now, Terrell Hatton, he's an Englishman. No, he's from England.
I got to vote for
and Cam Smith's from Australia, but he looks like he's from Arkansas.
I love the game Alabama or England. That's a fun one.
Yes, that's a good one.
But my only tip is to fade DJ because I was on the firm, similar to Gonzaga, loved hating on DJ as the one who couldn't win the big one. And especially when he gacked away. Was it at Pebble Beach, the U.S. Open, where he missed the putts?
Yeah, when he lost to Spieth 2015, yeah.
Oh, man. I loved it. Every second of it. He's won some big ones recently.
He had one of the best years individually. Last outside year. Tiger that we've seen on the tour last year.
Yeah, without fans. Because he backs it. And I'm assuming they're going to have some fans or some patrons.
Yeah, there'll be fans there. I think it's like 20,000 or something.
Yeah, I think I'd fully anticipate him choking, getting back to his usual self. Mm-hmm. He's a total head case. And so fade DJ.
DJ plus 950 over at DraftKings right now, looking at it. Spieth's getting a lot of buzz.
Oh, of course he is. He's
got his irons locked in.
But he's a head case too. He'll fall apart.
If JT didn't win the Players, he would be my pick this week.
Oh, but he's too hot?
Yeah, it's just you don't win the Players and the Masters in the same year. Like that's hard to do. I mean, that's two of the top four tournaments or top five tournaments. I mean, Tiger's done it before, but it's just like the odds say you just don't win both of them.
Right, right. You regress to the mean.
Like Cantlay, Joffrey, they're due for a win. Koepka at 28-1.
Joffrey has been he's been like Ricky Fowler as of late too. That like all his bridesmaid. So maybe I'll probably ride that just to see if he finally does cash one in.
Tony Finau's another one who can't buy a win, but he's always up there. He's 35-1. Mm-hmm. You can get him top 10 odds on him or top five odds for 6-1, which is pretty good for him. So, yeah, I mean, the thing about these tournaments is they're hard, but you can easily see a 50-1 shot winning it. It's not too crazy.
Not too unheard of.
Mm-hmm.
Well, man, I'm fired up for it. It's very different than the sport of football, but it's nice, relaxing, get the serenity of the course. And the only thing is,
the fake bird noise.
I always struggle to when you watch the Masters. It makes you want to play, but you also want to watch it. So it's like, do I go play?
Yeah.
You know, do I go get in? You know,
the worst is like Masters Sunday is the best when it's. When you know you don't know who's gonna win,
mm-hmm. and there's a couple guys in
like last year, DJ was a runaway, so it was like, oh, this isn't what it's supposed to be. So hopefully we get a good down to the wire Sunday. That's all I really ask for. And then Thursday, Friday, Saturday, just watching it all. It's pretty. I mean, it's just if you like golf at all, this is the best. This is as good as it gets.
Almost as good as listening to 11 Personnel, am I right?
That's right.
Well, we appreciate y'all listening to us. We'll be back next week. And until then, remember, go Cats and go Kroger.